And we are going to read the scripture for the morning that we're going to be looking at and talking about. I want you to remember as we read this, that Jesus wants to say something to you. These are his words, and he wants to show each one of us something. He's going to show all of us the same thing, but the way he applies it to your life and my life, it's going to have different shades, different connections. There'll be different things that he wants you to take this and do with it. So let's ask him to lead us through his word. So let's read it together. It's Luke chapter 6, starting in verse 36. Again, you can follow along on the screen. You can also open our app and follow along there and take notes or open your own Bible. Luke chapter 6, verse 36. This is what Jesus says. He says, "Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." He told them also this parable. "Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit? The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will end up being like their teacher. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye,' when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Father, I just ask that you would again take your word and apply it to our lives. Help us to see, help us to hear, and help us to do what it is that you say, Jesus. In your name we pray, amen. Amen. As you're seated, I want you to think about all of your relationships. So think about your close relationships. If you're married, think about your spouse, or think about your good friends if you're not married. Think about your family, your children if you have children. Think about all your relationships. But go further, think about the people you work with, think about your neighbors. Think about all your relationships. Think about the acquaintances you have. Think about all the relationships in your life. Just take a moment and try and just see them all there in front of you. Use your imagination. Think of all your relationships. How many of them would you describe as unshakable? Nothing could ever shake them. I think we've all probably had relationships at some point that we thought were unshakable, until something happened and they shook and they fell apart. I think probably every one of us has experienced that. You've got a friendship or you've got a relationship with somebody that you used to have and it's no longer there and you don't even know why. Maybe you sit here today wondering what happened or wondering why did that happen and why did it all fall apart. There's very few unshakable relationships in our lives. Now, I don't want you to just think of yourselves. Now, I want you to kind of zoom out with your imagination, and I want you to just picture all the relationships you're aware of around you, all the different relationships people have with one another. Picture all the relationships you see happening in our world and the way relationships are handled in our world. I want you to just zoom out and picture all of that. Have you noticed how shaky they all are? Have you noticed how quick people are to judge and condemn and write each other off, or to use one of the most overused words of our day, to cancel each other? Have you noticed how quick people are to do this and how shaky relationships in general are in our world? Is it really possible to have unshakable relationships? And what would it take? The last few weeks, we've been talking about building an unshakable life. Because that's what Jesus, in this sermon on the plain that he's giving, he's talking to his disciples, telling them how to live, and he's sharing with them how to build an unshakable life. And where we started a few weeks ago was Jesus comes to the end and he says, if you want to build an unshakable life, you build it on me. And the way to do that is you come to me, you listen to what I'm saying, and you do what I'm saying. You don't just, you know, hang around and maybe hear and practice some of it, pick the parts you like. You come to me, you hear what I'm saying, you listen to me, and you do what I'm saying. That's how we build an unshakable life on him. And so we've been looking at different things Jesus said in this sermon. We looked at what he said about building unshakable happiness a couple weeks ago. And then last week we talked about what he said about building unshakable love. And if you missed those, go back and listen to them. Today, we turn our attention to what Jesus had to say about unshakable relationships. Because what Jesus does here, he gives a command, one. He commands us to build unshakable relationships. He tells us the key to building unshakable relationships. And then he tells us two things that will get in the way, two things that keep us from building unshakable relationships. So he says, build unshakable relationships. He says, here's how to build unshakable relationships. And he says, here's two reasons why you're not doing it right now that are getting in the way. So let's start where Jesus starts. He starts by showing us that you can't build relationships that are unshakable on judging and condemning. Look again at verse 36. Be merciful as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Now, this might come as a surprise to some of you. You can't build an unshakable relationship on picking apart and pointing out all the things that are wrong with another person. It just doesn't work. Some of you, maybe you're in a relationship with someone like that. Some of you are that person. It doesn't work. It's not the way you build good relationships, by taking the handful of things you know about a person and deciding whether they're good or bad based on that handful of things you've seen, deciding whether they're worth your time or should be avoided based on the few things you know. But judging and condemning come very, very naturally to us. So much so that we may not even realize how quickly we do it. So much so that you could walk out of this room and we could spend half an hour here talking about this and you'll right away do it. And someone would have to say to you, hey, we just talked about that. And you'd be like, oh yeah, I didn't realize how easy it was to do. Parents do it all the time, looking at other parents and deciding, oh, they're way overly permissive or they're way overly restrictive based on the few things your kid tells you what their kid says. Like, okay, first of all, you've got really poor witnesses to go on. And you know one or two things, and what do? We judge, and we decide they're good or they're bad parents based on that. And then people without kids judge people with kids based on their vast knowledge of what it means to have children and be a parent, say, oh, well, I'll never let my kids do that. Or, right? We so quickly, it just naturally comes out of us. Or you're at work, and have you ever noticed that at work there are kind of like two categories of people? There are the people who are kiss-ups and the people who are lazy. And the kiss-ups are all the people who work harder than you. And the lazy people are all the people who don't work as hard as you. Somehow you became the line of measurement. Have you ever noticed that we do that? Maybe even subconsciously? We are judging and condemning machines. It comes naturally to us. And if there's one thing that the internet and social media has made clear, it's how much we love people, humanity, humans, love to judge and condemn and write people off. And in our culture, people wield, just think about this with me for a moment. In our culture, people wield judging and condemning as weapons against each other. Whether it's the people who have traditional values wielding judgment and condemnation against those who don't, or the people with progressive values wielding judgment and condemnations against those who don't, they've become weapons. They're tools we use to either exert power over someone or to try and take power from them. They're tools, they're weapons that we use in every direction. So conservatives judge and condemn liberals, liberals judge and condemn conservatives, and Christians have become known in our culture as some of the most violent people when it comes to wielding these weapons of judgment and condemnation. But here stands Jesus telling us, don't judge and don't condemn. What are we supposed to do? Like, what does he expect of us? Maybe we need an example. So I'm guessing a lot of you will know the story of Jesus and the woman at the well. We'll kind of go through it a little bit, and I'll give you the gist of it for those who might not. But Jesus, he left the disciples behind one day and went walking ahead of them. He's walking and walking. It's hot where they lived, and it's dry and arid. And he gets to this well, and he runs into this Samaritan woman there. Now, long story short, Samaritans hate Jews, and Jews hate Samaritans. So that's one reason why they shouldn't talk to each other or get along. And then besides that, this woman's, you know, kind of a little bit of a mess. She's been married 5 times, which even in today's standards, that's a little bit concerning. And she's now, at the moment she meets Jesus, shacked up with some other guy who she's not married to. So morally, you know, this is God. And, you know, why is he? He's not going to want to be around someone like this. And besides that, she's also someone who's very confused about worship and who God is. So there's all these reasons why Jesus could have, at that moment, written her off and judged her, and not been wrong because he is the judge. But how did Jesus relate to the woman? Those of you who know the story, I want you to think of it. Those of you who don't, let me just tell you what he did. He, first of all, asked her for her help. And then when she tried to highlight, you know, the gap between them, that she's a Samaritan and he's a Jew and they don't like each other, what did Jesus do? He offered her a gift. And then when she started to hide behind like a religious debate about, you know, is we worship at the temple or on the mountain, she brought that up. Jesus turned that into an invitation to a real relationship with God. So there's Jesus. He has every right to judge her and condemn her. But where you and I would be quick to judge her based on the few things we know about her, Jesus, knowing every detail of her life, refuses to either judge or condemn this woman. Because you can't build relationship on judging and condemning. You can't build relationships when you're writing people off and allowing their faults and flaws to become excuses not to deal with them. So why do we do it? Why do we as Christians do this? If Jesus said don't do it, why do we do it so much? Why do we ignore his command to not judge and not condemn and turn around and do the very thing he told us not to do? Someone has taught us in our culture that we need to protect Christianity from people who want to take things from us, to take something from us. It's something that's grown up over the last several decades, probably hundreds of years even, this idea that we've got to protect it from people who want to take things from us. And so we're constantly on guard trying to figure out, okay, who are the ones trying to take stuff from us and you know, get in the way and take away our rights? And we're constantly on this defensive trying to judge who's the bad people who are trying to get in the way. And we've forgotten that being a Christian isn't about resisting people who are trying to take something from us so that we can hold on to it and not have to be bothered by them. It's about freely giving what's been freely given to us. That's what being a Christian is about. Not guarding from other people who we figure out are our enemies because, oh, they're bad, I figured it out. But freely giving because we've been freely given something from Jesus. And that's an entirely different posture. This protective posture versus this presenting posture. Entirely different posture. Jesus is not calling us to this protective posture. Jesus is calling us to this posture, really this posture. Protecting makes me judge and condemn people quickly so I can determine whether or not I should avoid them or not. And what does that do in the end to you and me when we live that way? Does it deepen our relationships with people when we're constantly judging and criticizing and trying to spot all the things that might be wrong with them so that we know whether we should avoid them or not? Does that deepen relationships with people, or does that narrow us down and once again shrink us and shrink us and shrink us until we become a nub of a person instead of becoming the people Jesus wants us to be? Because pretty soon what happens then is you're judging everyone around you and you're worried about everyone failing you. And so you become this very narrow person, incapable of having relationship because you're always trying to spot, oh, this is what's wrong with them. Instead, Jesus offers the way to build unshakable relationships by saying at the end of verse 37, forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Unshakable relationships are built on generous forgiveness. But now we got to pay close attention here, because I know some of you, maybe all of you right now are wondering, there's a question that's in your head when we say, oh, don't judge and don't condemn. You're wondering, well, where's the line? Like, we can't just pretend everything's okay. Where's the line between not condemning people, but also not condoning? I don't want to condone things that are wrong. I don't want to condone sin. I don't want to condone failures and errors. So where's that line? You know, are we just supposed to pretend everything's okay? Look, it would be nice if everyone stopped judging and condemning each other. That would be nice. But we still have to call sin, sin. We still have to call injustice, injustice. And people who think that everyone could just coexist by just overlook everyone's faults, just deal with them, just tolerate them, put up with them, they're actually living in a fairy tale world. Because there is no world where you can build unshakable relationships by ignoring the things that other people do that are wrong or pretending everything's fine and there's no sin and there's no evil in the world. But Jesus isn't about spinning fairy tales. He, more than anyone, knows the danger of sin and how it destroys relationship. And so this path Jesus offers us to unshakable relationship doesn't push sin and evil away. It actually deals with them. Let me show you what I'm talking about by taking you back to the story of Jesus and the woman at the well. Surprise, surprise, Jesus practiced what he preached. And so this woman, to say the least, there's three things we know about her that show that she's broken. There's at least three areas in her life that we can point to and say, okay, this is broken about her. Number one, she bought into the cultural hatred of her day, the racism of her day. She hated the Jews because the Jews hated her people. She bought into that. So we see that in her, number one. Number two, she was at best a relational mess. Jumping from relationship to relationship to relationship to relationship to relationship to relationship. A relational mess. Third, her life demonstrated that she wasn't really concerned about honoring God with the way she behaved, but she still acted like it mattered to her. So she was a fake worshiper. She was pretending to worship God. She was a hypocrite in that way. A dishonest worshiper. But Jesus didn't judge or condemn her for any of those things and all the rest of the things he knew about her that we don't even see. But he also didn't ignore them or pretend they didn't exist and that they weren't there or that they were okay. He brought them up, but he didn't bring them up as a weapon to hold over her or as a reason to avoid her and go away. They were actually the reasons why he met her there that day. It wasn't an accident. He met her there that day on purpose because he was coming to meet her sin and her failures with an offer of grace and forgiveness. And brilliantly, he started by asking for help from her. He put himself in the place where he needed something from her. He walked all those miles without water, got to that well with no bucket or anything to get water with. He put himself deliberately in the place of weakness so that he could start this conversation with her with a request for her help and say, could you please give me some water? That's genius. So many times we want to come to people arrogant and prideful, like I already have everything I need. You couldn't possibly offer me anything. Jesus did the opposite of that. Because he knows that the path to unshakable relationship runs through generous forgiveness. And so what Jesus does is he puts forgiveness together with generosity for a reason. It has to be both. And this is one of those places where our world messes this up, where our world gets confused, because our world thinks, oh yeah, just everybody be generous to each other. Everybody just tolerate each other. And that the way to have good relationships is just put up with the things about each other and just, you know, just ignore those things and you'll be able to get along. Just tolerate everyone's points of view, everyone's opinions, even if they're contradictory to each other, even if they maybe sometimes hurt you. Just ignore it and push it aside and we'll all be okay. But if we don't deal with sin and brokenness, there's no way to build an unshakable relationship. Unshakable relationships aren't built on pretending there's no such thing as sin or wrong. There's no such thing as, you know, truth that is true and ideas that are false. Unshakable relationships are built on acknowledging each other's faults and flaws, forgiving each other for them with generous forgiveness. So Jesus doesn't pretend there's nothing wrong. He identifies it, but not to condemn her, but to open a path for her to experience a generous forgiveness she'd never seen. Now, this is tricky. This is not something that'll be easy for you or I to do when you go to work, when you're at home with family, when you're in your neighborhood, or when you bump into a stranger. But at least let's get the overall point here. You and I, we can approach relationship with anybody and everybody by either looking at them and saying, I see the faults in your life, I see the things that are wrong, I see the flaws, and I'm going to use them as a reason for me to kind of hold back and withhold from you. Or you and I can go through life, recognize the things that are wrong in each other and wrong about each other and sin in each other's lives and say, I'm going to choose to be generously forgiving toward you and lean in toward you in a way that's generous. Those are the two options Jesus gives us. And you know what that means? That means that the Christian way of dealing with people who, you know, maybe are sinful or do bad things that you don't think are wrong, that the what we call the Christian way isn't really the Christian way. Because for many of us, we think the Christian way is, oh, I see this is wrong with you and that's wrong with you and you do those things and they're bad and they're, this lifestyle, this decision you're making, this way you're behaving, I see it's wrong. I'm just going to go pray for you. And we distance ourselves from people, but we say, I'm going to pray for you. And maybe you do pray for them, but you're still not doing what Jesus said. Because that's still, you're judging them and condemning them in a way that you're using it to say, I'm not going to deal with you. And that's not what Jesus is talking about. That doesn't at all sound to me like generous forgiveness. Pressed down, shaken till you fit some more, overflowing, poured into your lap kind of forgiveness. That sounds like mealy-mouthed, withholding, no different really than judging and condemning and saying, I don't want to deal with you because you're a bad person. But what Jesus talks about, have you ever been to Five Guys? You know Five Guys, the burger shop? I know they're famous for their burgers. Do you know what they're really famous for, though? Somebody call out the fries. The fries. If you go into Five Guys, if you haven't experienced it, first service, it was too early for them to do it. The rest of you, you could do it today. Tell them I sent you, then maybe I'll get a discount later when I go. But go in there, order a fries. You get, you know, a cup of fries. The cup's that big, right? They put your burger in the bag. They put the cup in the bag. And you know what they do next? Bag's this big. They take that scoop, and they just keep scooping fries into that bag. You're like, I only ordered the medium fries. Yep, these are the medium fries. And they just keep filling that bag until it's bursting and overflowing, and they shake it, and they put more in, and they shake it. That's what Jesus is talking about. Having Five Guys fries types of friendships, being Five Guys fries types of forgiving toward people. That kind of generosity in our forgiveness, this is what he's talking about. So generous forgiveness, Five Guys fries way, doesn't pretend that other people don't have sin or failures, but it also refuses to use them as a thing, an obstacle that disqualifies them from building relationship with them and in offering them forgiveness. It won't see them as obstacles to a redeeming relationship. It gives that forgiveness the Five Guys fries kind of way, pressed down, shaken together until the bag is bursting. The path to unshakable relationships runs through generous forgiveness. So that's, Jesus has given us the path now. There's the way not to do it. Here's the way to do it. And Jesus is telling you and me to do this. Those who follow him will do this. And then he says, here's two reasons why you don't do it. Here's two reasons why you won't do it. Here's two things that get in the way. Number one, we don't do it because you're following the wrong leaders. This is what he said, verse 39. He told them the parable, can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit? Picture that, would you? Just to appreciate Jesus' humor here because he's funny. Jesus did tell funny stories and say funny things. Just picture that. Picture a blind person leading a blind person across Route 1. What's going to happen, right? And then he says, the student is not above the teacher. When you're fully trained, guess who you're going to be like? The person who trained you. That's who you're going to be like. When it comes to relationship building, whose example are you following? Whose example are you following? Are you blindly following everybody else's examples? Just like sheep, we don't know why we're going. We don't know where we're going. We're all just going. So let's just go. And you just measure by, am I doing it at least as good as the people around me? Okay, I must be all right then. And Jesus has in mind a particular group of people. When he warns them, he said, there's a particular group of people who set themselves up as being very righteous and very holy. And the way they maintain their what they believe is their righteousness and holiness is by judging and condemning all the people who aren't as righteous and holy as them and using their judgment and their condemning, their condemnation, to avoid those people, to push them out, to weed them out. And that's how they preserve themselves as holy and righteous and good, they think, in their minds. And then Jesus tells his disciples, you need to be more holy than them. But guess what? The path is not by being more judgmental than they are, by doing more condemning than they do. It's actually the opposite. It's by giving generous forgiveness. Not tolerance and apathy, because ultimately the way we talk about tolerance really is apathy. don't care enough about people to actually get involved in their life and their troubles. Just pretend they don't have any and we'll all get along. That's nonsense. That's fairy tale world. What Jesus is saying is care enough to be involved in the mess and to offer generous, loving forgiveness in the midst of it. He says you're going to end up being like the person or the people that you're following. So if you're following the example of our culture or of people you're watching on TV or the example of movies or the books you're reading or even your friends, then what you're building is a really, really shaky way of having relationships. And sometimes the smallest things are, some of you already, you know this, this has happened in your life, the smallest thing happens and your relationships fall apart. Either because of them or because of you, probably because of both of you. Because you're not building relationships the way Jesus showed us to. And that's why everything's so shaky. Who are you following? The bad answer is anyone other than Jesus. Because only Jesus can be a solid foundation for this. The even worse answer is to say, I'm not following anybody on this. Because that means either you're so confused and blind you don't realize who you're following and who, that you're following people's examples, or it means you're just following yourself. Have you ever tried to follow yourself? What would happen if you tried to follow yourself? I'm going to follow myself for a minute. That's what happens. You just walk in circles. You don't go anywhere. You don't build relationships. That's the worst person to follow. Follow Jesus. The one, number one reason why we don't do this is we're following the wrong leaders. Jesus isn't actually the one leading our lives. So we'll call ourselves Christians and do the opposite of what he says. But Jesus calls us, follow him in this. Second reason we don't do this, second reason sometimes we won't do this, is because we're focusing on the wrong person. And that's what this last little story Jesus tells us about. Why are you looking at the speck of sawdust in your eye in someone else's eye when there's a giant 2x6, 8-foot long plank in your eye? And again, this is funny. Like if you were to draw a picture of this, this is funny looking, right? How silly is it if you're trying to do that? He says, how can you help your brother? How can you even say to your brother, there's a speck in your eye? How could you see that if there's a plank in your eye? You can't. He's like, you hypocrite, take the plank out of your eye. There's a famous author, very influential in the business world. His name is Jim Collins. And he says this, or something like this. He says, look in the mirror before you look out the window. Look in the mirror before you look out the window. Now, let's be clear, because there's a mistake you and I could make here. We could get this wrong. Jesus is not saying, instead of judging and condemning other people, judge and condemn yourself. No, that's the way to death too. That's another way to death. You kill relationship by judging and condemning others. You also kill relationship by judging and condemning yourself. And some of us do that a lot. Some of us have a problem with that. And we don't realize that when you judge and condemn yourself as irredeemable, as unfixable, you know what you're doing? You're telling Jesus he's not powerful enough to help you or redeem your brokenness. That's not what Jesus is calling us to do. He's not telling us, instead of judging and condemning others, judge and condemn yourself. He's saying, take the energy that you might typically have poured into trying to detect flaws in others to judge and condemn them, and pour that same energy into examining yourself. Because how can you trust yourself to see clearly anything when you've got giant planks just blinding you to what's true? So it's comical and it's funny, but there's at least two points this makes that you and I need to recognize. Number one, you and I are never in the position where we know enough about a person's life to be the final saying on whether they're good or bad and deserve hell or not or anything like that. You and I are never in that place. Jesus, knowing everything about that woman, still refused to judge and condemn her. You and I barely know 5 details about a lot of the people we meet that we judge and condemn. We're never in that place. Right? First of all, turn our attention to yourself by confessing and dealing with your own faults, and that will begin to change the way you see others. You don't begin to see clearly and be able, oh yeah, Jesus has made me so much better now. He's wiped my eyes clean. Now I can really see how messed up all of you are. That's not the point. It changes the way you look at everybody because you learn a new humility. Because guess what? Jesus has wiped me clean and made me new. But I'm still a mess. I was driving to church the other day and thinking about this message and realizing how badly I do at it because I was so annoyed at the person driving in front of me. And I'm like, I am not giving generous forgiveness to this person at all. And they don't know it, but I just murdered them in my head. And it just struck me how far I am from being a follower of Jesus in this because of that feeling, because I allowed that in my life. And I just confessed it right there and then. So yes, I've been washed clean, but this is a process that has to happen over and over every day. And the same is true for you and me. And once you begin to realize that and you begin to confess and see, yes, Jesus, show me. And I see where these things are blinding me. You begin to realize this is something that we do for the rest of our lives, and he gradually continues to change us and move us, and that just gives you and me a humility about other people's faults because we never get to the place where we feel like, yeah, I've got it together. It's always by his grace. And so then we can do this wonderful little nugget at the end of verse 42, which this is what opens up for you and I when we stop examining others, instead examine ourselves, respond with confession and asking for God's forgiveness, and we receive it. Then 42C happens, the last part of the verse. Then you see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. You don't see clearly to spot the speck. You don't see clearly to, look at that speck in your eye. You don't see clearly to lord it over them that, oh yeah, that person's got this. Did you see the specks in their eye? I'm going to avoid that person. I can't be. No, you don't. You see clearly in order to what? Come alongside and help them. Build a relationship with them where you're being helpful. Everything changes. You're not like, oh, I see that speck. I'm going to avoid them and take that posture that's anti-Christ. But instead, I see that speck. I'm going to come alongside them with Five Guys Fries generosity, my forgiveness, and I'm going to be there to help them and offer them this life that Jesus offers. So instead of building relationships on judging and condemning, which is what our world does, building them on spotting specks and leaving them there so you've got something on the other person, we start building unshakable relationships first by asking God to help us see ourselves clearly. That happens as you read God's word, as you worship, as you pray. Help me see myself clearly so I can be cleaned. Make me aware of the planks in my eyes. And then I can turn around and offer the measure of forgiveness that was measured out to me onto everyone else around me. These are the kinds of relationships Jesus calls those who follow him to build with everyone, not just the person you love the most in the world, but with everyone, to build unshakable relationships that reflect his unshakable relationship with us through generous forgiveness. Worship team, would you come back? You know, a lot of you remember how that story at the well ends, right? Jesus and the woman. She goes back to her village, gets all these people, says, come, you need to hear this guy. He's like told me everything I've ever done. So like he knows everything about me. And through Jesus' generous forgiveness, he created a redeeming relationship for that woman. And not just for her, for that whole village of people who thought the Jews hated them. Well, here's Jesus loving them, who were very confused about God, and here now they get to enter into a relationship with the Messiah, with Jesus. Right? Jesus, because of his generous forgiveness, launched a new relationship with this woman and all these people between them and God. And his disciples finally showed up during this, and they're like, what's going on? Who's he talking to? Why is this happening, all these people? And they try telling Jesus, hey, come here, Jesus, you got to eat something. You haven't eaten all day. You've been traveling all by yourself. You've been out here in the hot. You got to eat something. You got to eat something, get your strength back. And Jesus, do you know what he said to them? Do you remember what he said to them? He said, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. And they're checking his pockets to see what he's got. The food he was talking about was building relationships with those people there, with that woman and with that village. That was his food. That's the God we serve. For him, what he lives off of, the food that he eats, he lives to build these unshakable relationships with you and with me, and to see us build them with each other. That's the kind of God we serve. Not the one who's like, I'm judging and condemning you. There is a day when people will get what they've chosen, where they reject God to the point where there is judgment. But first, We stand in this place where God is sending out forgiveness in generous waves through the blood of Jesus on the cross and saying, come to me, you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. You're burdened by your sin. You're burdened by all your fragile relationships. Take my yoke on you. Join with me. Nothing's going to break this yoke. Join me in this unshakable relationship, and I will transform every other relationship you have. That's what Jesus is offering. That's the kind of God we serve, who has poured out on you and I, overflowing, incredibly generous, five guys, fries, generous forgiveness. That's what he's done in our lives. And that's what he wants for us and from us. Because of Jesus' generosity, we can stand here today and say, we're forgiven of our sin, forgiven of our failures. They're not ignored. They were dealt with on the cross in Jesus' blood. And every day he deals with me that much more about them because of his generous forgiveness. And this morning as we sing this song, it's all about that generous forgiveness. And then there's one part of this song that just stops and says, Jesus, you are my king. You are my king. You are my king. You know what that means, right? He's my leader. He's the one I follow. Not me, not anyone else. So in this song, we're first confessing his generous love, and then we're confessing he's our king and saying, Jesus, I'm going to follow you. I'm not going to stumble over the leadership of others who are just leading me to a pit. I'm not going to become the kind of person who leads others into a pit because I don't follow you. I'm going to follow you so that others can see the way too.